because we noticed that it had a capital S and a capital N. I was like, well, surely that didn't make a difference.
No, I got it. No, it didn't. It should be all lowercase. I don't know why it's interesting.
Okay, good. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Alabama Care. Today, we have Ms. Sarah Nall, who is the executive director of Mitchell's Place. Sarah, would you like to say hey to the viewers and introduce yourself?
Hey, I'm Sarah Nall. I am the director of Mitchell's Place. We are a clinic and preschool for children with autism, and we also serve typically developing children.
So it's the perfect time for this interview because it's Autism Awareness Month.
Yes, it's a month that we love, and we have a fundraiser this time of the year to help bring awareness, our junior board does, but it's a great month just to make people aware of autism, its prevalence, and also acceptance, because we are an invisible disorder. So people often, and parents often feel isolated because it is an invisible disorder and people don't understand it.
Right. I know. Also for the viewers, anybody watching, if you have questions or comments, you can just leave them in the chat box because I'll be checking those. But yeah, I'm glad you said that because I hear that from a lot of parents because I've always been so confused when it comes to autism. Like, what does it mean? Because it's just such a huge spectrum. And some of these kids, you know, you would think, you know, they look typical, but maybe they're not. So I'm glad you said that.
Yeah, it is a, you know, you can have anywhere from a nonverbal child who has self-interest behaviors to someone who scores a perfect score on the ACT or the SAT. You know, there's everything in between, and one child has autism is very different from another child who has autism. There may be some similarities, but they all are very different and have to be treated accordingly.
Right. I've seen that. And I've even seen a bunch like on TV shows. Like I remember watching one season of Big Brother. My husband and I like to watch Big Brother. And one of the guys on there said that he was on the spectrum. And so I think it's so good now that so many people are open and talk about things like that so much more. So Mitchell's Place, y'all have two locations now, right?
We do. We just opened a clinic on the south side of Birmingham, and it is just a clinic right now. We only do applied behavior analysis or ABA. Mm-hmm. We only do that there right now. In June, we will expand that location and offer speech therapy, occupational therapy, psychological evaluation. So we'll be able to evaluate there, both from 2 to 12 to older. And we will also expand our ABA program there. So we're excited that June will be able to serve more children.
Yeah, that'd be good. So y'all's Mitchell's Place, can you tell me y'all's mission, y'all's mission statement?
Sure, that's great. It's a great, we are a very mission-driven organization. Everyone in this building on Overton Road and on Southside, you know, that we have servant-hearted staff, because what we do is not easy. And serving kids on the spectrum can often be difficult. So we are here to serve families and children who have members on the autism spectrum in the best way that possible. Because when a child has autism, you often are isolated and nobody really understands that except another person who has a child on the spectrum. So what we offer is community as well, so that parents can, you know, have birthday parties together. And if the child has a meltdown at the birthday party, you're not going to judge them, because parents often feel judged because it is an invisible disorder. And if your child has a meltdown in the grocery store because there's too much sensory stuff going on, then most people don't understand that it's not because the child's being a brat, it's because they have sensory overload. So we are mission driven, and everyone here, you know, they love what they do or they wouldn't be here.
I love that so much. One of the first things that stood out to me when I was on y'all's website was that Mitchell's Place was founded by mom and dad in 2005. And a quote that the dad, Alan Meisler,
is Meisler, that right? Meisler.
Meisler, Alan Meisler. So he's one of the founders, and he mentioned a quote that he said that helped describe his feelings about Mitchell's Place. And the quote was, as one person, I cannot change the world, but I can change the world of one person. And I just love that so much because I feel like that's like every special needs parent, you know, that's kind of your goal. You want to make the world a better place for your own child. And then kind of on the way, you can help other people. So I just love that. I love that so much.
Well, our founders are amazing and wonderful. And what their son, Mitchell, really didn't, he was 10 by the time the preschool was completed. So he really didn't benefit from being in our preschool and he never received ABA. So, but Alan and Nancy have made it their life mission to make sure that other families do have access to that and do have the ability to help their child progress and maybe even, and most of the time, change the trajectory of not only the child's life, but of the family's life. Because if you can take a child from a nonverbal situation and have them where they, when they go to kindergarten, they receive very little services, it opens up the world and makes life easier for the family as a whole.
Right. And then also, is Mitchell's Place just for autism or other developmental delays too?
We do serve other developmental disabilities, but autism, we have one spot in each of our classrooms for high support, which is usually children with ADHD or receptive or expressive language where they don't need the applied behavior analysis, but they need the behavioral supports and often get kicked out of other preschools. So, but our outpatient, we also do a dyslexia testing and serve children with dyslexia. We do our speech and occupational therapy serve all children with developmental disabilities. So it's, we serve a wide variety. Our early learning program is mainly autism and typically developing peers. And then we also have slots for, we call them high support children who need the support that we offer, but don't need the applied behavior analysis.
Okay. Gotcha. So, I mean, I guess you've already talked about like the services, like with the different, therapies.
Yeah. Yes, and then outpatient, applied behavior analysis, outpatient speech, occupational therapy evaluations. And then we offer that in our early learning program too, almost like a resource type setting, which is what you see in schools. So that when a child leaves here at 3 o'clock, when they don't have to go to speech, they don't have to go to OT, they don't have to go to ABA. So mom and dad can go home and enjoy their child and not have to haul them everywhere.
Yes. I love that so much. Yeah. So y'all focus on like even like getting the kids ready for school. And then y'all even have like handwriting stuff and so all that sounds really good. And then ABA, I had never heard of that until, I don't know, probably a month ago. Now I see it everywhere. And so from a mom's perspective, I have heard nothing but good things about it, like from other moms and some moms that go to Mitchell's Place that I know, they love it. Like they can't say enough good things about it. And then also I read a story about this mom, like, I don't remember exactly, but basically without the ABA therapy, that allowed him to continue to live at home, even like it, like I'm not sure. I don't remember exactly the story, but I think from like a mom's perspective, it's such a good thing. But I have heard like it's from like an adult standpoint who have like had the ABA therapy, there's like negative side effects, they say. What is your take on that? Like, have you heard any?
Great question. And it's a real controversy out in the ABA community. ABA has evolved significantly just since, especially since I've been here in the 5 years I've been here, but in the you know, 40 years of its existence, it has evolved, especially in the world of autism. I think when it was evolving, when what are adults now, when they were receiving ABA, it didn't look like it does now. Now there are the board certified behavior analysts and the registered behavior technicians have ethical standards that they have to follow now and meet to keep their licensing, because they're licensed now in our state, in Alabama anyway. So now if you go to a quality and a accredited, especially clinic or preschool that offers applied behavior analysis, it is a great thing. What we do is all positive. We don't use negative. We don't use anything like that. Everything is based on positive behavior supports. And that's what ABA should be and is. And it's offering choices and different things like that. So there some people, it hasn't been a good thing. And for some, depending on the child, they need to add other things with it. But ABA now, if you go to a reputable clinic, which is key, reputable clinic who support their staff and train their staff the way they need to be trained, it makes a significant difference. I mean, one thing Alan says is, and it's critical that they get it from 2 to 6, which Mitchell didn't get. He just was too old by the time they really, and it hadn't evolved yet by the time they started Mitchell's place, and he was old enough to, or even know about that. So it's a great question. It's a big controversy right now. But bottom line is, you go to a quality, reputable clinic or place that offers it, you will see significant improvement in your child.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I've heard. Like when I heard it mentioned about it being like a negative thing, I didn't dig too far into it. But from what I did see, it was something to do with like some of the adults saying like it affected their like decision making or something like that. But like I said, I didn't dig too far into it. I was looking more for good things. And I know that people I know personally had, you know, just all good things to say about it. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, it is really the foundation of what we do in this building, because you can't do OT, you can't do speech without having that behavior, you know, decreasing those behavior barriers so that they can learn the way they need to learn. And we do it in a positive way.
Yeah, and I feel like that's kind of with anything. Like some people have good experience, or some people love stuff, some people hate it. Some things work for some people, some things don't. But I get what you said about it evolving. So that makes sense that the adults maybe that had it a long time ago, it's just different now.
Yes, absolutely.
So the early learning program, the preschool, the classroom setup, like what is the student to teacher ratio, and is it, and I could be saying this wrong, but like the neurotypical peers, is that right? Okay. Yeah. And then how many peers to students with autism?
Great question. We have 4 classrooms, 2, 3, 4, and 5-year-olds. And in each classroom, there's only 10 children. 5 are on the autism spectrum, 5 are neurotypical or typically developing in the classroom. So we use those typically developing peers as peer models to help our children with social, to increase their social skills. And they often will actually even go to speech with them. And we use them in a variety of way. And it helps our children on the spectrum to see typical behaviors modeled appropriately. And for our kids who are typical, it offers just those skills you can't teach, those characteristics that you're supposed to learn that are on the wall of every teacher and starting in elementary school, but compassion, that everybody learns differently, and that sometimes we need to step in and be a friend to somebody even when we don't want to or scared. And our kids who come out, because a lot of our teachers here, their children come here, and the thing that they'll hear the most is, your child's so compassionate and always steps in to help. And so they're learning a lot of those just sweet little skills you want your child to have when they leave here. And we've had that question, why would you send a typically developing child to a school that specializes in autism. Well, one, we're accredited. We're an accredited preschool. And two, it just gives them that skill set that is often hard to teach. And they just come out to be better children. But we have a lead teacher who has her master's in special education. And then we have two assistants in each classroom. So it's a 3-to-1 ratio. And we do lots and lots of training. It's like a reverse inclusion. We set our classrooms up for our children on the autism spectrum. And then we invite those typically developing peers, because no matter what, a child flourishes in a very structured environment. But we do everything a regular preschool does, you know, the tooth fairy comes, we do music, we do movement, we do all those kinds of things. We just treat everything, even our learning, through the lens, behavior lens. We plan our, what we're going to teach on, okay, if I teach this, how am I going to set my students up for success behaviorally? I can't have too much time here. I can't do this. So we really look at it through a very different lens, probably, than most preschool students, because we have to, because of the behavioral issues.
Right. So is there like a waiting list for the school? Like, how do you get in it, or how do you get on the list?
Yeah, great question. Even for our typically developing peers, there's a wait list. What we do for our children on the autism spectrum is they call in, we get them on the wait list. They do trial runs, like right this time for next year. And so they'll come in and we'll determine, are they appropriate for a group setting, which is our early learning preschool, or a one-on-one setting, which we have as well, which is learners, autism learners who need that one-on-one all day. So they come to do a trial run. And then once we're set, you know, we don't add people until the next school year, and we run August to July. We're a year-round school system because our little bitties regress so much. We have to be here all summer with them. So it's just calling, getting on our wait list. And sometimes the wait list is just a matter of waiting till the next school year and doing a trial run. Generally, you know, especially our older children, there's just not enough room or space to serve them all.
Right. I love what you were talking about with compassion. So my oldest daughter, Charlie, she is about to be 6 in a couple weeks. Mm-hmm. So she is, she has a lot of seizures, and she has a lot of developmental delays. So she's in a wheelchair and she's nonverbal. She uses a G-tube to eat. And so she has a little sister that is almost 3. And it's so funny. Parker is her name. She hasn't been out like too terribly much because of the pandemic has kept us in. But Friday night, we took her to a rodeo. Uh-huh. And I mean, and that's not any of our thing. We had some free tickets. And so I thought, okay, well, she needs to be in like a different environment and all that. So we took her. And my husband they had some kind of thing where they let like a baby calf loose, and then the kids were trying to like chase it and get a tag off. So I don't know how many kids were out there, but anyway, so Parker, like, she's probably a little too young to be doing it. I wasn't super comfortable, but anyways, so she went out there with all the kids, and it could have had something to do with her age too, not really caring what you're supposed to do. But out of all those kids, like, we watched her, and one of the little girls lost a shoe, and Parker went and picked up the shoe, and we were watching her, and we don't know how she knew who that shoe belonged to, but she walked straight up to the girl and tried to give her the shoe, and the girl didn't see her, so she went around to the other side, and it just melted my heart. Aww. I thought it was the sweetest little thing. And so I felt like that was kind of that compassion coming into play. Like, she wasn't worried about winning which also, you know, she's probably a little young to understand what she was even doing, but still, I thought that was the sweetest thing. And she is, she's so sweet. And I tell everybody this because to me, it's so funny, but one of her first words was G-tube, because Cece has a G-tube. Aww. And so, like, little things she's always doing with her dolls and stuff, I'm like, oh my gosh. And then also it's rewarding for me. Like, it just kind of gives me little reminders that I'm doing stuff right, you know, because I'll hear her repeating stuff and it's like, well, I know she picked that up from me or heard me say it, you know, so it's a good feeling.
It is a good thing. It's good for our typically developing peers to have that kind of love, support, and kindness. It's, right. I mean, it's all those characteristics that we as teachers, I was a teacher for 30 years, but we as teachers are supposed to teach, and you that it's a perfect, it just lends itself to that here. And it sounds like you too.
Yeah. So how many families do you think y'all are serving like right now, or how many families have y'all served just over time since y'all been open?
Well, we serve in our year round program, which is our one-on-one program and our early learning preschool. We serve 52 children year round a day. And then we serve another 25 children in our outpatient who come for just speech or just OT or speech and OT and ABA, applied behavior analysis therapy, or through our evaluation process, comprehensive evaluation. So we serve about 75 kids a day. And we serve probably that many, or probably not that many, but most in the last 5 years, we've served that many a day. And before that, we probably served about 50 a day. We've just kind of restructured our program so that we could serve more kids now. And they added on in 5 years ago as well. So,
yeah, well, good. What about autism statistics?
You know, they just changed the DSM-5, and we are now 1 in 44 children have autism or are diagnosed with autism. And a lot of people go, God, that's so many, you know, where did that come from? But we're diagnosing better. The DSM-5 about 5 or 6 years ago also changed, instead of having pervasive developmental disorder, that it's now autism. And if you want insurance to pay for it, you can't diagnose before the age of 2, a true autism diagnosis. But we have children who their family member knows they have autism, so they'll self-pay before they're 2 just to get the ABA therapy or the speech therapy. So, but 1 in 44, which is significant, and hopefully, you know, not that that's a great thing, but hopefully it will move towards more autism research. There's not tons and tons out there. So we're not getting the funding we need for the research to really know what is causing that. I think we're diagnosing better, but it's prevalent across every socioeconomic level, across cultures worldwide. We have a child here who came from an island in the Pacific, in a small village in the Pacific Islands. So you know, it's everywhere. So I think maybe with the awareness and acceptance, more research will eventually be done on it.
Right. And because I was wondering about that, because I saw one thing, it was 1 in 44, then I saw 1 in 54. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't sure. And then I also read where it's more common in boys.
Mm-hmm. 1 in 4 boys have a diagnosis, but it was 1 in 54 just 6 months ago, maybe 3 months ago. It just changed to 1 in 44. And then I mean, before 1 in 54, I mean, it has changed rapidly in the last 10 years. It went from in the last 10 years, 1 in 150. And it just in the 5 years I've been here, it's gone from 1 in 64 to 1 in 44. Goodness. Which is significant for 5 years.
Mm-hmm. As far as like awareness goes, I feel like it's going pretty good. I've noticed where like Chuck E. Cheese has certain days of the week that are like dedicated to kids with special needs and autism, like sensory friendly stuff. And then also, I was looking at a list of like destinations for children with disabilities yesterday, and I saw that the Peppa Pig theme park in Florida was like certified something for autism. Mm-hmm. and everybody there was like trained in a special way. And I thought, well, that's really cool.
I know. We are fortunate in our city to have an organization called Culture City. I'm not sure if you've heard of them, but they're awesome. And it's 2 doctors here in town who started this, and their child is on the autism spectrum. But they have helped facilitate the sensory awareness. They provide sensory bags. They fundraise, provide like for our zoo. They have certified, they probably are the ones that certified the Disney program. They have built sensory rooms in many of the national basketball stadiums, football stadiums here in town in Alabama, in Birmingham. We, you know, our stadium, our Birmingham BJCC, they have a sensory room. So we're fortunate that people are starting to be aware of the importance of that, because it's not only just autism, it's even children with ADHD often get sensory overload and need just a quiet place. But, you know, you have to remember also in the last 10 years, you know, the explosion of sensory overload in everywhere. So it not only has that increased, but there's just a great awareness of the need to sometimes go to a quiet space to calm down, to get back and where it's not, even heat can do that. So we're really, you're right. There is a big awareness, which is great for our babies and our families to have that if they need to go where they can travel and go. And there's also colleges now offer autism services. So you can pay an extra like $3,000 and they will meet with your child once a week to make sure they're getting in touch with their professors, getting in, you know, doing things like that. So it's autism services that are as prevalent in most of the major state universities. So it's evolving and just more needs to be done. But with a prevalence of 1 in 44, we have to have that to help our children as they grow and as adults even.
Right. That is so cool. I didn't know that the BJCC had a sensory room, but even like some clothing brands are coming around. Like there's like shirts, like for kids, like my daughter who has a G-tube, like easy access to the G-tube or like the tagless stuff or just certain things. Like, I guess where stuff like that would bother some kids. Mm-hmm. So can you tell me like people who have events and they're sensory friendly, what exactly does that mean?
Yeah.
And I'm asking for personal reasons.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. Like we're about to have a Birmingham Barons, which is our minor league baseball team here. We're about to have a sensory friendly game in May. And normally at a baseball game, I don't know if you've ever been to one, but it's loud and they play the music really loud. So they bring it down to, you know, the lowest notch you can do. And they just adjust. They have cooling stations set up for our kids. They have areas set aside for them to kind of cool down. But mainly it's a noise thing at like a Barons game. It'd be a noise thing. Same thing at like... they have sensory friendly at the zoo. They just, for the first 2 hours, don't let as many people in, and they give them sensory bags if they are on the spectrum. So it depends on what it is, but I know at the Barons game, they don't let as many people in. The noise level is significantly lower. Same thing for any of the plays that the Children's Theater offers, great plays. They generally just don't allow as many people in. And so that it's not as noisy and you can spread out more and or you can leave. The symphonies even had a sensory friendly. And normally when a symphony plays, you have to be quiet. You can't move around. They allow the kids to run around and, you know, they play at a lower level. So depending on the event, it can mean different things, but it's just a tolerance and the ability for the children to kind of take a step outside if they need to. Like we are having, we have a Funky Fish Fry, which is a fundraiser next weekend. And we're having Culture City has this, it's a trailer that you can have them come and go and sit. If a child has sensory overload, it's kind of like a sensory room. They can go sit in there, kind of get things together and then come back out if they need to. So it can be different things at different places.
Wow. So the reason I ask, so like I told you, my daughter, she has developmental delays and she's in a wheelchair. So I have noticed, you know, there's not much for kids like her, like these fun events. Mm-hmm. There's so many events, you know, for typical kids. So last year, my husband and I started doing just some little events for local kids like her. And then so they were kind of like test runs. And so when they worked, you know, we just trying to invite more people, and we're turning into a nonprofit. But we started off with an egg hunt, and then we had a fall festival, because we went to a local pumpkin patch and Charlie couldn't even ride on the hayride down to the pumpkin field. It wasn't accessible. So from that first egg hunt, which we've only had one, to this one, we've got one coming up this Saturday. So between that one and then the kids that I met from the fall festival, like, I've learned so much stuff about different kids. Mm-hmm. Whereas that first one, I was just mainly thinking about kids like Charlie, who couldn't pick up eggs themselves and stuff like that. So I made like a little glove with some magnetic eggs, and the parents would just help guide the kid. So luckily, it was just kids like her, plus the other kids who were running around. So we're doing these events for these special needs kids and their siblings. Plus, you know, it's for the parents too. Like, when we first started talking to you, we were talking about community. So a big thing was, like, it's a judgment-free zone. Like I said, like, I've never known much about autism, but I know a lot of people who have kids with autism, and I know that they have like meltdowns or things like that. So it's a place where you're not going to get stared at or judged. Or if you have a kid like my daughter, like if they have a seizure or just, you know, different things, like, people aren't looking at you like, oh, I'm so sorry, like,
yeah,
feeling sorry for you, because, you know, that's the last thing we want. Mm-hmm. We just want to kind of blend in. So it's a place where, and I've said so many times before, like, I have no shame in saying it's just for special needs kids, because I want them to kind of be able to move at their own pace and get to do what they want to do and not be stared at. Because all these siblings who are typical, they know how to treat our kids. Yeah, you know?
They do, which is sweet.
I love what you were saying. But about the sensory thing, like, so the things that we have done, it's more, like I've said, like, accessible. Mm-hmm. So, and then I met some kids in wheelchairs who probably, the way that I set up the eggs last year, probably wouldn't have had as much fun. I met them at the fall festival. So now this year we're having extra course to where the eggs will be higher up, but more hidden. So yeah, it's kind of like we found ways to kind of bring nature up so they could touch the dirt and grass like the other kids. Mm-hmm. So I'm learning a lot about different kids, but as far as like sensory friendly, I'm like, gosh, I don't know what that means. And so I went and bought some like earmuffs, like, mm-hmm, but then I thought, well, some of these kids who wear those, most likely they're already going to have them. But mm-hmm, I thought, well, I'll have some just in case. And so I think stuff through, like, as far as like what I'm going to put in goodie bags and stuff like that. But I have been one, and I've even like reached out to, some kind of, I don't even remember. It was like Autism of Alabama, something like that, but I never heard back. But yeah, just like ideas, like what can I do to cater to the kids with autism? But like we've talked about, like, it's such a huge, huge spectrum. Like, it just,
it is. And yeah, some kids can do it by themselves and some don't. It's, and some of it is pre-teaching. Like, we do trick-or-treating here, mm-hmm, and the parents come, and it's teaching the parents how to teach the kids. We do social stories before the trick or treat, so they know what to expect, what they're supposed, mm-hmm, to say. And then walking, the parents walk to us to each station and get a little bag of candy. And of course we adjust so that, because we have lots of families who have nutritional, dietary issues. So, you know, generally it's gluten-free, no chocolate, that kind of peanut-free. So, but just teaching parents, because it looks different everywhere and each child is different and what works. Earphones may work for one kid, but we have a lot of children here who don't like them. Right. So, you know, they'll just use their hands until they can get to a place where it's not so noisy. So I think it just depends. And thank you for doing that, because generally most of the stuff that happens out there in the world is just like Mitchell's Place, is generated from a parent having a need and wanting to do that. But there are, Autism Society of Alabama does have a great website that you can access that might have some of that information. And for you, because you're starting a nonprofit, I know this is not in there, but contact me later, because I have a special interest group that is, it's nonprofit of all special needs, and it will give you access to lots of other things like camps and things for kids with disabilities. That's at Children's Harbor. There are a lot of people that are in that special interest group, peer groups, you know, that meet monthly that would be very helpful for you.
Yes, that sounds great. Good. I know that's why I love doing these interviews, because I get to connect with so many people and learn so much. So what about like some early signs and how to spot autism? Like we were talking about, it's invisible, but like, are there certain ways that people could pay attention and be open to seeing it in somebody?
Yeah, that's a great question. And what we have found, a lot of times speech is our gateway to getting kids tested at this age, anyway, 2 to 6. Generally, what you see is restrictive interest or sensory issues, like they don't like the way something feels, or they don't like to, you know, go in somewhere because of the sensory. Communication, like I said, speech is often the entry, how we get kids to be evaluated. And then repetitive behaviors like hand flapping, that kind of thing. And if they're not meeting their milestones, and a lot of times also know that if you as a mama have a hunch that it might be, but your pediatrician says, oh, let's wait a year. Often our pediatricians, they get maybe a sentence this big about autism. They really don't have the training needed. And also what they often don't know, we're working to help educate that world, is that, yeah, if you suspect before they're 2 and they wait a year till right before they're 3 or at 3, well, the wait list to get services is a year to a year and a half. So if you wait, a lot of times the wait list to just get evaluated is at least 6 months most places. Then once you get evaluated, the wait list for services is a year to a year and a half. So if you have a hunch, go through, get them evaluated, get he or she evaluated, because if you wait, your chances of getting them in the therapies that they need is difficult. So you need to go ahead and do it as soon as possible. Those repetitive behavior, communication, restricted interests, and sensory generally will guide you, not hitting some of those milestones.
Mm-hmm. And I've noticed, like when you go to the pediatrician, like a lot of the questions, like isn't this a big one? Like they won't respond to their name or make eye contact.
Mm-hmm. All that, just not generally. Like we had someone who worked here, and she's a grandmother and had her grandchild. She suspected him, and she brought him in when he was 14 months old because he wouldn't respond to his name, and he just was kind of always over by himself. But never really had the repetitive, but had huge sensory issues. So that kind of thing. And you'll see your pediatrician will ask those questions, but if they want to wait till the next year, I would say bring them in.
Yeah. So do you have any tips on how to cool a meltdown?
Big, broad question, because everybody's different. And it depends on the meltdown, where you are. Prevention is probably the best key. So say you're going to introduce something new or go somewhere new or do something, do what's called a social story, which is create. It can be, you can draw pictures, you can do anything. We generally print pictures off and make a little booklet and read it many times before we introduce something new. We do it for parents here, say they're going to the dentist for the first time or to get their hair cut. We offer haircuts here once a month because that's a very difficult thing for children on the autism spectrum. They don't like soft touch, a lot of them. So it sometimes takes months before they'll even let someone cut their hair, of just sitting and have our little young lady who comes just, you know, touch their hair or get them to where they brush it. But creating a social story, we're going to get our hair cut today. This is what's going to happen. This is what it might feel like. And, you know, that kind of thing. And giving choices, if you give 2 choices, then they'll often not, if probably prevent a meltdown if you give choices. And there's a lot of books out there like Parenting Scientifically, which is a great at dealing with behavior and ABA visualized. At my daughter, I have a 22-month-old grandson, and I gave both of those to my typically developing grandson, gave them to her my daughter, just because it's, when you're dealing with a two-year-old, it's not any different than what we deal with a lot here. So a lot of that kind of behavior, but meltdowns are very broad and it depends, but I think prevention is probably the best thing. And then allowing them the time to just work through it, calm back down, not touching, not demanding, not, you know, grabbing them and making them go, just let them calm down. And then when they, I like the way that you calm down, a lot of positive speak. I like that the way you're calming down. I like the way you're listening to me now. And then give them that choice. Do you want, would you like to get up and go have a seat? Or would you like to stay here for a little while longer to calm down? You know, just that kind of thing. But usually not fussing at them, but giving them that positive, I like the way you're doing that. You're doing a great job of calming down. And it takes time and space. So, I mean, if you're in the middle of a grocery store, you just got to give them a minute. And that's where it can be so socially isolating. Shipped was probably the best thing that ever happened to our parents. They were like, oh my gosh, I'll have to go to the grocery store. but yeah, that I know that's really broad, but it just depends on what, you know, giving them the space, offering that positive and offering choices is probably the biggest thing to be that broad.
Right. I know any grocery store pickup, probably for any special needs parents, that's huge. Like you don't have to get out.
Just going through the, even pulling up at Walmart, they can just throw it in your car or Target or, you know, that's a lot of our parents were like, this is awesome.
I know. Like, thank you. That's like a good thing we got from the pandemic, which it seems like maybe they were starting to do that a little before, but they were kind of forced to kick it in high gear.
Exactly.
So are there like any kind of, you know, and I thought that I saw this, but then when I went back and, looked, I didn't see it anywhere, but are there like classes available for professionals who deal with the public, like police officers, on how to handle kids or adults on the spectrum or with disabilities?
Yes. A lot of, in the Birmingham area, you know what, I just lost his name, but there is a parent of a child who's not only on the spectrum, but has lots of other comorbid disabilities too, but he goes to all the local police stations and certifies them in autism so that they know, and they all wear, they get these patches that say, you know, autism trained and stuff, but and he's a parent, I can't think of his name, but I can send you that information later, but there are classes for that. And we do it. We had there's a charter school that started here a year or so ago, and we trained all the staff in behavior, not necessarily just autism, but the issues we train really well, and because we have to, because that's what we need. So when we go out into the community, we help people who to know about behavior and the best way to handle behaviors. And so we trained all the staff for this charter school before they opened. And our parents are trained monthly who receive ABA services. So Dusty does it for his parents, for policemen and some places like Mitchell's Place will do it for a fee, and I think that he charges a fee to go into these play stations, but it is available. And I'll look, I think it might be on the Autism Society of Alabama's website.
Mm-hmm. That is so cool. And I think that's where I thought I saw it, because when I went back and looked, it was just, you could fund, I don't see it in my notes, but you could, or get a grant for these bags for first responders. And they came with like sunglasses, earmuffs, the little stories that you were talking about. Yeah. That was a lot of fidget toys. So I thought that was so cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was a parent need. There's also bracelets you can buy that the kids can wear that say, I am autistic. So that if I've ever stopped or in an accident, Or a lot of parents of younger children have these straps you can buy that say, I am autistic, so that first responder will know this child is on the spectrum. So we need to act accordingly.
I've seen those, like some of them will go on the seatbelt.
Yes, say, correct.
Or I have epilepsy, or these are my medications, or.
Right, or right.
Like that. That's really cool. And then also talking about meltdowns, I read where sometimes it's even the opposite. Like sometimes people will just completely shut down. And the biggest thing is, like you were talking about, is just not to judge them. And then I read too that they're like sometimes they'll show signs of distress like before a meltdown.
You can generally, we can tell usually by their behavior, or for us, meltdowns can also mean the child's not feeling well. At our age, if they're not, if they can't communicate well yet, or even if they can, they don't. With autism, sometimes you don't have body awareness like other disabilities, and or you can't communicate that. So if they're about to get sick, we'll see lots of meltdowns because, well, you know, you'll have one day, you'll have four meltdowns. They're like, oh my gosh, and you go take their temperature and they're running a fever. You would have never, they would have never said, I don't feel good. So it just can be a lot of different things. And so you, what you have to remember, it's not the child's fault. So you have to, it's a shift in thinking from what I think we are taught as a culture. And even as a, you know, sometimes teachers, you know, you just have to shift thinking as it's not their fault. What can I do to make the situation, to help them help themselves and in a positive way? So, you know, meltdowns can be, it can be anything causing that, even your health or their health.
Right. Something that I was wondering, like at the events that I have, like I always want to play music. And that was a big thing that I wondered about, because last night I was reading something about helping the kids calm down. They'll listen to music. And I was thinking, or could that be a trigger? But I guess like what you were talking about earlier with it being too loud. So maybe like it's fine as long as it's not just like blaring in their ears.
Yeah, I think so. I think just at a low level and nothing too loud to where they have to cover their ears.
Mm-hmm. So are there any autism resources, like specific ones that you recommend?
There are, you know, we have books that we use here, like Parenting Scientifically, and we also use the book called ABA Visualized that we give out to parents. If your child is in school, a website that is good is called Wright's Law, and it deals all with the individual education plan or an IEP. We have to teach our parents, because at Mitchell's Place, we kind of do everything for them. And when they get out in the school system, the parents have to advocate for everything. So right before they leave us, we're teaching them how to advocate, which is sounds easy, but it's hard because you don't know what you don't know what you can ask for. And if that's not your gift area, it's hard to ask sometimes. So I think Wright's Law, I think the Alabama Autism Society, it has a great website with lots of different things on it to access. And I think joining Facebook groups, they started one because 5 years ago, we didn't have insurance for autism therapies. We do now. We had to fight for it in 2017 and finally got it. And so I'm on a lot of those Facebook groups for the autism that were born out of that. And parents ask all the time, hey, this is going on. Where's the best place for this? Or does anyone know, to offer ideas? So I think joining social Facebook groups like that are good. And if you Google autism in Alabama, autism families in Alabama, or get on Facebook and do that, it'll pop up. And those have been a great resource for our families. And it's easy because you get a lot of different points of view, and you can, you know, PM some of the people if it's something you want to more know detail about. But I think all those are helpful. A lot of the churches now are finally getting on board, because Sundays, maybe 7 years ago, they were probably the most isolating time for parents of children on the spectrum, because their children weren't allowed to attend church because their behavior was inappropriate. And churches now are working with families with disabilities and really inviting them into that space so that families don't feel so isolated and don't feel kind of put out by their church, which makes me really happy because, you know, that's what you need the most. And mm-hmm. I think it was just not being aware, churches not being aware that there were things that they could do that would make that happen.
Right. Oh my gosh, I should have wrote it down. There was something I was going to say about something that you said, but talking about the churches, you almost kind of wish that some of like the bigger people in charge or some of these people who pass laws had somebody close to them who say had autism or had, you wish that they had a real life taste of why we're pushing for these things. Oh, I remember the Facebook groups. Yes. Those come in handy for just everything, even like early diagnosis when you're mm-hmm. feeling alone or just connecting to other people like you. Those are huge.
I will often see on there, I'm just venting, and it's a mom telling about their day and what they, you know, the kid had a meltdown, this, and then I'm just venting and thank you for being here. And then all these moms are there to support. It just feels good to not feel like you're alone.
I know. Cause when most of like your typical friends with typical kids, like they don't get it. But talking about the Wright's Law, what is that?
Wright's. And they have 4 books, but if the website's a little overwhelming, but it's fabulous. But they have books that are like all about IEPs.
Oh, cool.
Then they have, this one is really good to me because it's from emotion to advocacy. And it kind of tells you how to take that emotion out of it, because you get so angry sometimes. It makes the situation work. But they have one on special education law, one on tests that should be done. So it's, they offer a lot of things, and their parents who had similar issues. So they started this website and this nonprofit, and they'll come talk to you, and or they have seminars all over the country. But that by far is the best education if you have a child in school with an IEP. They have the most information on about it and how to work within that constraints of schools and IEPs. Because it looks, for us, it looks very different here than it would in a public school setting.
Mm-hmm. Also about resources, I've noticed on y'all's website, y'all have a tab with just like lots of mm-hmm. websites listed. And I was like, geez, like these people, like it's not even just about promoting yourself or what you do. Like y'all seem to really care, and y'all have all kind of stuff listed. So I'll probably post a link to that page in the comments when this is over for people to see.
I mean, bottom line is
a lot of good stuff in here.
We want to help children and families. I mean, and if it's not something that we can provide, and we generally have a wait list. I mean, our ABA wait list is a year and a half long. So if we can't provide it, we want them to get something, some help somewhere. And most places who do what we do feel the same way. So anyway, we're here to help families and children and make their world a better place to live in.
Yes. So what about some of y'all's like past events and upcoming events? And I want to say this too. So the annual night at the Oscars that y'all just had, I saw where it was like 16th annual, and I was like, oh, a night at the Oscars must just be something, and they do stuff for different people, different each year, because I was like, 2005 wasn't 16 years ago, and it was like, wait a second, yes, it was. It's just crazy how time passes.
Oh, I know. And well, we didn't have our first Oscars was actually 2016, but we generally have it. We used to be on the night of the Oscars, and we moved it to a Saturday before, and we generally have it like the Saturday before the Oscars, but it was during spring break this year, so we adjusted. But it is our largest fundraiser. It's a black tie gala. Have lots of families there who have been with us for years, who donate. This year the mayor came. He's a big supporter of Mitchell's Place. But it's just a fun grand gala that allows us to not only let people know about Mitchell's Place. We run a video that shows our kids and their progress and what it means to them to have the therapies that they have. And then this weekend, we have the Funky Fish Fry, which is our junior board and the Autism Society of Alabama's junior board get together. And it's a 12 or 13 years old, but it's at Avondale, and we have music and we have, stuff for the kids. It's a family event to raise money for autism. So it's generally a really well attended event and just lots of fun for families and to come and see. And then we have another fundraiser that is this will be our second time to have it. We had it in 2019, then COVID shut us down for 2 years, but it's called Dragon Boats. Mm-hmm. And it's at the East Lake Park, and it's these giant boats that hold 21 people, and you do races, you row, which sounds, it's finesse and not all brute strength, but it's so much fun. And we chose East Lake for a reason. In the underserved community, there's often, they don't even really know about autism or haven't heard enough. They don't have access to care like we do in more privileged areas. So we want in that area to make people aware of what Mitchell's Place is, what autism is, what milestones they should be reaching. And just grand awareness. And so it's fun. This year we're going to have it's Bloody and Boat. So it's a Bloody Mary contest and then the Dragon Boat races too. So that's August 21st. It's Saturday, I think it's the 21st at East Lake Park. And it's a lot of fun. It was new to the area. So nobody knew what it was last year. I mean, in 2019, but we had a really good turnout. So
oh, all of those sound really fun. So how can someone help sponsor Mitchell's Place?
Great question. If you go to our, there are many reasons, many ways. You can come to our night at the Oscars and buy a table. You can do a straight donation. If you go to our website, there's a donate page. Be a sponsor for our Funky Fish Fry or even a sponsor for our Dragon Boat races. We also, we have had parents who, when they were here, they had someone donate money and scholarship them because, it's expensive to have a child on the spectrum. Even with insurance, you're talking $1,800 a month to be here, even with insurance. Mm-hmm. So we have what we call our parent relief fund. And like some of our parents, their insurance will only cover a certain number of hours of therapy, but they need, like if you're a teacher, that it only covers a certain number of hours. So then you rack up another $20,000 in bills. So we have a parent relief fund that you can donate to that we give directly back to parents. We scholarship some parents to help them ease some of those bills, because it's, as you know, expensive to have a child with special needs. Doesn't matter what their disability is. So we try to help that. We've got an endowment started that we hope to grow big enough eventually in the next 5 years so that we can offer scholarships regularly. But our website has all that. And if you do a sponsorship, you of course get all the recognition and all that. But if you want to do a straight donation, you can just go to our donation page. So, but we appreciate anything and everything. So we try to help as many people as possible.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. So as we come to a close, is there anything particular that you'd like to see more of in the disability community?
I think we're doing a good job moving towards acceptance and inclusion. One thing that's missing that it's almost cost prohibitive right now is when parents have children who are in school and then summer comes around and they don't qualify for extended school year program, they don't have anywhere for their child, school age child on the spectrum to go because they often need a one-on-one aid to go to any of the camps. I'm not talking your higher functioning kids that can kind of ease right in. So I think we need more opportunities for school age families to have the support they need for a summer program. We just didn't have the facility here, and or it would need to be funded by somebody, because to have a one-on-one aid for each child is expensive. Who are trained the way they need to be trained to offer programs for these children on the spectrum. I think we are an ABA desert in our state due to reimbursement rates for insurance. And so there's not as much opportunity. You have, every clinic or place that offers what we offer has a 30 or more deep wait list. And it's because there's just the reimbursement rates are low. I mean, we're just now getting, we're 5 years into insurance. And, so I think as we progress, we can get a higher reimbursement rate, which will allow us to serve more kids. But it's kind of hard to serve the kids we serve in the manner that they need to be served in without an increase in that.
Well, I would have never thought about that because I'm a stay-at-home mom. So I don't think about stuff like that. But for some of these parents who both parents work, or if it's a single parent, that's a pretty big deal.
Mm-hmm. It is. It's hard because in our world, most of our parents work because it's so expensive to provide at least the care that we offer here. So it is, and we get calls, it's heartbreaking that we can't offer it, and or we don't even know anywhere that offers. We have doctor's offices calling us, but mm-hmm. The issue is cost of providing it's labor intensive. What we do is labor intensive, so it's expensive.
Right. I know a little bit off topic, but it's so crazy, besides services, but even for kids like Charlie, equipment that she needs, these kids need this stuff, and it's so expensive when families like ours already have so much other stuff to be paying for. It's wild, what insurance won't cover, but certain stuff that they still need, it's crazy.
Yeah, it is crazy. And it's interesting how they choose what they need and what they don't, but
I know it.
They rule the world.
I know it. Well, this was so much fun, and I learned so much from you, and it was very nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too. And you're welcome to list my email if anybody wants to ask questions. I'm game for that. We would love to help anybody we can.
Perfect. Well, it was good to meet you, and I'll be reaching out to you, and I hope that you have a good rest of the day.
Okay. Thank you all. Thank you for the opportunity. Bye, Hannah.
Bye.